First Baptist Church of Redmond, September 9th, 2012. Special guest speaker, Don Mogford of Shepherd's Ministries. The Kindness of God.
Please read with me 2 Samuel chapter 9, verses 1 through 3. And David said, "Is there anyone left of the house of Saul, that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?" Now there was a servant of the house of Saul, whose name was Ziba, and they called him to David. And the king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" And he said, "I am your servant." And the king said, "Is there not still someone of the house of Saul, that I may show the kindness of God to him?" Ziba said to the king, "There is still a son of Jonathan. He is crippled in his feet." Thank you. You may be seated.
Thank you very much. I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Don Mogford, who has been a pastor and who has retired, and now he's enjoying working for God in a different way, and that is by representing Shepherd's Ministries to this part of the world. So, Pastor Mogford, why don't you come on up? At the end of his presentation, we're going to try to play a DVD, so I may run back up here and make strange noises and sounds, but that's just the way we have to do it here. So, good to see you, Mr. Mogford. Doctor, not even a nurse. Come on up and talk to us about Shepherd's Ministries.
I want to just sit here.
Okay.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, I just got to tell you a story before I get started. When the gentleman brought the offering plates and set them up here, it reminded me of an interesting story I heard. I just got to look and see what's here. Yeah, sure enough, there's some money here. Several years ago, one of our other representatives by the name of Al Pick, so I serve the western states, Al is in the Midwest, and Al often, since he actually lives in Union Grove, Wisconsin, where Shepherd's is, he often takes one or two of our residents out with him. And one of the men that he takes out with him plays piano and often will play an offertory. But in that particular situation, in that particular Sunday, somebody else was scheduled to do the offertory. So the church person played the offertory, but then they were going to have this young man play for just special music. And so they had already taken the offering, and the offering was sitting up here on the communion table, just as you do it here. And so they called him to come and play the piano. And so as he went up to the piano, he stopped by here and took out some money and stuck it in his pocket and went on up and played the piano. I am putting it back now. Okay. Sometimes our intellectually disabled adults are rather inappropriate in their judgment, in their social skills, and hey, there was money there. And he probably didn't have to dig to the second level like I did to get some cash. Everybody's watching. But he never thought about that. And so, of course, Al Pick, the representative, had to say, "Okay, Sean, we need to put that back." So, anyway, it's sometimes an interesting experience spending time with our residents. Just before I get to my message, I want to do two things. I want to just talk to you about the literature on the table. I want to tell you just a little bit more information about Shepherd's, and then we'll get to the message I have this morning. It's pretty obvious to you that we do have some literature on the table. Just a couple comments. If you're not at all familiar with our ministry, Shepherd's Ministries, this single item would probably be your best explanation, your best introduction to our ministry, and talks about the various divisions of our ministry. Then other items out there, such as these brochures, mainly have the purpose, if you're interested in supporting our ministry, I always do say, and I do believe, that what comes first is your local church. And yet, if the Lord has enabled you to give beyond that, I think we're one ministry among many that is worthy of your consideration. This item and several others on the table speak specifically about Shepherd's College. This item mentions the fact of our not only our accreditation, but that we're approved for federal student aid programs, which is a wonderful new opportunity for our residents, or excuse me, our students and their families. Just two other items. Some of these little items could be used not only as a bookmark, but maybe you are a person who puts missionary prayer cards on your refrigerator as a reminder or some other place. This could serve a similar purpose as a reminder to you to think of us and to pray for us. And then last, we every year produce a calendar. And these calendars, I think, are pretty good quality. Most years, they feature different ones of our residents. Most years, there are also scripture verses for each month, and that is the case in this current year's calendar. The new calendars will be coming out soon, and I believe this is one of the last weeks that I can offer that you can sign up and actually get a 2013 calendar. So if you're interested, that's the purpose of these clipboards, and I'll just pass those around. Anybody that's interested, we'd be happy to send you one of our calendars. So if you could just take that and pass it around and sign up as you wish, I'd appreciate it. Well, let me just talk to you a little bit about Shepherd's Ministries. For those of you that may not be familiar, may not have gotten in on the Sunday school presentation today, let me just answer five questions about Shepherd's Ministries. So we're going to talk about who, what, where, when, and why. So that's some good basic information, don't you think? So first of all, who are we as Shepherd's Ministries? Let me give you our mission statement. Shepherd's Ministries exist to glorify Jesus Christ by supporting people with intellectual disabilities to reach their potential. So there's a couple things you learn out of that mission statement. Our focus is on people with intellectual disabilities, and more specifically, adults with intellectual disabilities. And our goal is not to just leave them kind of where they are and just kind of just do caretaker work, but rather we want to help encourage them and enable them to move toward their maximum level of appropriate independence. So we're always helping them grow, helping them advance toward that highest level of their potential. And that happens throughout all of our programs. Let's move on to the second question, who and what? The what, let me talk about several functions that are going on at Shepherd's really all the time. One is care. So we provide care for our residents and our clients and our students, especially thinking of our residents. We have about 90 full-time residents on campus right now. In addition to that, we have some who are in day services. We provite care for them and respite care clients as well and others. But our goal is to provide them what level of care that they need, always thinking of how we can care for them by helping them move toward greater independence so they need less care. So that's always ongoing. There's a second thing that I would call coaching. And again, that kind of goes along with what I described as helping people toward independence. We coach them toward independence. We also coach them in terms of relationships. I kind of think it's funny to think about it, but you may have heard that when you were raising your children, or you may remember when you were raising your children that from time to time there were conflicts. You realize that actually happens at Shepherd's too, between our residents. And so part of what we do is coach them through those conflicts and coach them as to how they can avoid that conflict in the next time or how they can resolve it on their own next time. So you see, we're coaching them along in terms of relationships, coaching them in terms of their spiritual life and development. Sometimes we call that discipleship or mentoring, and that's always something that's going on with various ones of our residents. And then another function that's going on is evangelism. I mentioned in the Sunday school class that one of our non-negotiables is that we're not only committed to the Word of God and to Jesus Christ and the local church and a born-again staff, we're also committed to evangelism. And let me just tell you one story that I think is kind of fun to hear. I just looked at the clock, and it's later than I realized. I'm going to have to really hurry. Okay. I thought, wow, I better cut this story out. But it's a great story, so I'll try to tell it briefly. But it's a story about Brad. Brad is a resident in our facility, but he didn't really grow up there as some of our other residents did. Brad grew up in his hometown, and his family went to his school. But once he got out of his high school, he just sat at home. And he wasn't adjusting well to just being around at home and doing nothing. And it was becoming a problem for the family. And along the way, somebody in the family, a relative, had told them about shepherds. So mom and dad took a trip and visited shepherds. And they were really quite impressed. You know, you kind of have this fear about an institution, you know, but it seemed like more like home. And so they were really liked what they saw there, and they thought, you know, maybe this could be a solution for Brad. And so they took Brad for a respite care visit a couple of weeks where we just try it out. And really, when Brad came home, now he didn't say anything about it because he was nonverbal, still is, but they understood from him that he'd gotten along well and he seemed to be pleased with it as they would ask him questions about it. So they talked about it and considered it, and they thought, you know, well, let's try it again. And Shepherd said, sure, he can try it again. And so they took him for a second visit, and Shepherd said, we'd be happy to have Brad become a part of our family here, you know, whatever you folks decide. And so finally the decision was made that Brad would become a long-term resident at Shepherd's. And so they brought him in the fall of the year and dropped him off and brought his stuff and all of that. And his dad tells the story, it was kind of a tough trip home because mom cried all the way home. And I kind of think, you know, how some of us felt when we took our kids to kindergarten or the first year at camp or something like that. And though Brad was a young adult, it was still tough for mom and dad, too. Well, Brad really adjusted well, though, and seemed to be quite happy. Mom and dad came to pick him up for Christmas and brought him back home, and they invited some relatives in, and they were going to have this big dinner, and so everything is great, and they're down, you know, sitting down around the table, and everybody's dug into the food, and if somebody notices, though, that Brad's not eating. Come on, Brad. You know, it's chicken or whatever. Eat. Brad won't eat. So finally, he communicated to them that apparently they'd forgotten something. And so, again, his dad tells the story, anybody can make up a prayer, and so he did, and so then Brad would eat. Things were fine until it was time for bed, and, you know, Brad got in his old red bedroom, and he was in his pajamas, but he won't go to bed. And so they try all these things, and he won't go to bed, and he's obstinate, and finally he communicates to them that they've forgotten something, and they need to read a book, and so they try books, and nothing's working until finally we better try a Bible. So go find a Bible. So they found a Bible, read a Bible story, everything's fine. So they brought him back to campus and mentioned one of the staff people. It seems like Brad's kind of gotten into religion, huh? Well, yes, that's who we are. You remember, that's what we told you. We're a Christian organization and we do Bible studies. And whatever, Brad's happy. Later in the spring, mom and dad came back and they came to a dinner. And a bunch of parents were there and they met some other parents. And they watched Brad and his buddies over there at the table interacting non-verbally, but anyway, interacting. And they were just happy. Things are good here. So after the evening, they asked one of the staff people, what is it that's so special about shepherds? Well, let's just step in the office here and we'll talk. And that evening, mom and dad got saved. Brad actually had come to faith earlier on. Mom and dad didn't understand that. But now they did. And mom and dad got saved, and within 2 months, both siblings, younger siblings, and two grandparents got saved. So I guess I like to tell that story is kind of an affirmation of the fact that Shepherd's Ministries is more than a social service agency. Really, we're a missionary agency. We're an evangelistic ministry. And as you support us and as you pray for us, I believe that you are really supporting both components. A social service agency, a social ministry, but more importantly, a Christian organization with an evangelistic heart. Well, so the what? We're involved in care and coaching and evangelism, and the last thing I want to talk about is opportunity. We're a place of opportunity for our residents to grow toward independence. We're a place of opportunity for our staff to exercise their spiritual gifts and their training and their compassion as they serve our residents. It's also a place of opportunity for volunteers. And it's a great provision for us that many skilled volunteers come to us every year and utilize the skill set that they have to help save us money, realistically, from having to go out and contract for a whole range of services. And some of them are very simple things, like that mailing of those calendars that maybe some of you will get. A big team of volunteers comes in and does this huge mailing. And so that's a wonderful provision for us. And the volunteers are always invited. Let us know if you're interested. Who, what, now where, if you haven't picked it up, we're located in Wisconsin. Long ways away from Redmond, Washington, isn't it? But, you know, there's a good reason. And actually, we have tried to go to other states like Florida and Pennsylvania and California. But it's never worked out because of restrictive policies of the government, those state governments. But wonderfully, and I think this is a miracle for which we give really praise to God, in Wisconsin, the legislature has passed law, the governor has signed it, that Shepherd's Ministries of Union Grove, Wisconsin is exempt from, and there's a whole list of stuff, areas in which they do not intrude, where in other states we would face those intrusions. So we're able to do what we do as an evangelistic, gospel-centered, Bible-centered ministry in Wisconsin where we could not in many other places. And we serve the nation from there. We have a number of residents from the state of Washington, so it's nothing new. So who, what, where, and when? Let me just simply put it this way. It's 24/7, 365 days a year. We're a round-the-clock residential care facility. And then why? Why do we do what we do? Well, really, it boils down to this, I think, that we believe that every human being has absolute intrinsic worth. It's not a question of IQ. It's a question of humanity. We believe that every human being is created in the image and likeness of God, is fearfully and wonderfully made. And they, as any of the rest of us, deserve compassionate, understanding care. And we're privileged to focus our ministry on a particular group of people who are otherwise marginalized in much of our society. So that's a little review of who we are as Shepherd's Ministries. And really, I guess you could say that another reason we do what we do is because we believe that it's to this group of people that we should show the kindness of God. And that kind of brings us back to our text. We've already read a little bit in 2 Samuel chapter 9, but I'd like you to take your Bible and turn to 1 Samuel chapter 16. We're going to get to 2 Samuel 9 in just a few minutes, but let me kind of move us that direction by giving you a little bit of background in terms of some of the great moments in David's life. Not all of them, but just a few of them, and I'm going to pick up here in 1 Samuel chapter 16, where we find that David is anointed king. Remember, his good-looking brothers and his taller brothers were all brought in, and the Lord said, no, that's not them. But if you look in the end of verse 12, the Lord said to Samuel, arise, anoint him, for this is he. And then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers, and the Spirit of the Lord rushed. I love that. This is the ESV translation, but the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward, and Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. Well, we have the great story of in chapter 17 of David's encounter with Goliath. And it's not just a great slingshot story. It's really a great story of the faith of a young man as he trusted in Almighty God to bring that deliverance. We find in chapter 18 that we have the friendship between Jonathan and David developing, and yet also we have the heart of Saul turning against David. In chapter 19, we find evidence that Saul is trying to kill David and is out with his forces hunting him down, and there's a lot of intrigue in that whole story. But now we come to chapter 20, 1 Samuel chapter 20, and I want to pick up, this is a little bit more of the relationship between Jonathan and David, and I pick it up in verse 14. David is fearful of coming into the palace for dinner, and they're talking about whether it's safe or not, and it's in that environment, in that context, that they have this conversation. And Jonathan's looking forward to the time when David would come to power as the next king. Jonathan says this, if I'm still alive, show me the steadfast love of the Lord that I may not die. And do not cut off your steadfast love from my house or my family forever when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. And Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David. And I'll stop there. Just interesting back there in verse 14, Jonathan's appeal to David is, show me the steadfast love of the Lord. That word steadfast love, or that little phrase there, is a translation of the Hebrew word, the word chesed. It's kind of an odd-sounding name to us, or word to us, chesed. But I had a Hebrew professor that said it's the most beautiful word in the Hebrew language. It's a word that means, as it says in my translation here, the steadfast love of the Lord. It's the faithful love of the Lord. It's the loyal love of the Lord. It's God's faithfulness to His people. It's very similar to what we think of in terms of God's grace toward us, and more of a New Testament word. But this is a character of God, of His commitment of loving faithfulness to His people. And what Jonathan is saying is, now David, would you show that kind of faithful, loyal kindness, that steadfast love to me and my family, that same kind of steadfast love as Yahweh shows to us? Would you be God-like in kindness toward me and my family? And in that situation, David said, yes, I will. And they made a covenant together. Well, I want to move on in the story then. We're going to skip ahead to a very sad event at the end of 1 Samuel, chapter 31. And this accounts the fact of the death of King Saul, his armor bearer, and three sons at the hand of the Philistines. I'm going to pick up in verse 2. First Samuel 31:2, and the Philistines overtook Saul and his sons, and the Philistines struck down Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, the sons of Saul. And the battle passed hard against Saul, and the archers found him, and he was badly wounded by the archers. And he said to his armor-bearer, kill me, and the armor-bearer said no. And so Saul fell on his own sword, and when the armor-bearer saw that, he fell on his own sword that in the same way. And then the summary of that situation is verse 6, thus Saul died and his three sons and his armor-bearer and all his men on the same day together. That's a pretty grim day. 2 Samuel chapter 2, verse 4. And the men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. That's like king over the southern kingdom, you might say. Verse 8, but Abner, the son of Ner, commander of Saul's army, took Ishbosheth, the son of... Wait a minute, I thought his sons were already killed. Well, yeah, three of his sons were killed. We already read that. But there is a fourth son, and now he would be heir apparent, wouldn't he? And so he is made king here in 2 Samuel 2. Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and he was made king over Gilead. That would be like the northern kingdom. I want to go over to chapter 4, 2 Samuel 4. This is more about Ishbosheth. We find that he was grieved at the death of Abner. We find in verse 2 that he had two men who were captains of raiding bands. And their names, we find in verse 6, were Rechab and Baanah. And those two men came into the house, this is verse 7, as he lay on his bed, as the king lay on his bed in his bedroom, and they struck him down and put him to death and beheaded him. Okay, now, the fourth and last son of Saul is gone. All right? And then, we find in chapter 5 that all the tribes of Israel came to David in Hebron and said, behold, we are your bone and flesh. And they made him, David king over now the full kingdom of Israel, north and south together. Chapter 6, we find that wonderful occurrence of David taking leadership and bringing the Ark of God back to Jerusalem. Some interesting parts of that story that I won't go into this morning. Chapter 7, we have the wonderful Davidic covenant established. It's a wonderful study in and of itself. In chapter 8, I want to just read the last part of verse 14, a summary of that chapter. And the Lord gave victory to David everywhere, or whenever, or wherever he went. The Lord gave victory to David wherever he went. He was a great victorious warrior and king. But now we come to the text that we read earlier, and I want you to focus on that with me. David said, this is chapter 9, verse 1, and David said, is there still anyone left of the house of Saul that I might show him kindness for Jonathan's sake? Remember the covenant? Now, where there was a servant of the house of Saul, whose name was Ziba, and they called him to David. And the king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" And he said, "I am your servant." And the king said, "Is there not still someone of the house of Saul, a descendant of the former king, that I may show the kindness?" This is the same basic phrase, the kindness of God. In the previous text, we saw the kindness of the Lord. Basically the same here, the kindness of God. It's that chesed word. "Is there not still someone of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness, show God-like kindness and grace and compassion and faithfulness to him?" And Ziba said to the king, "There is still a son of Jonathan," and it's almost like, but he's crippled in his feet. That is the way that they in those days, and I believe today, we tend to view crippled people. Let's go back just a few verses and let me let you see this again in chapter 4, verse 4. Jonathan, the son of Saul, had a son who was crippled in his feet. He was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel. Remember when we heard about the three sons, including Jonathan and Saul and the armor bearer, were killed in battle. That news came, and the nurse took him up and fled. And as she fled in her haste, he fell and became lame. Now I don't know for sure what happened when she dropped him. Maybe he fell on his feet, and they broke. Or maybe he fell on his spine and there was a spinal cord injury. Or maybe he fell on his head and there was a traumatic brain injury. I don't know. But the result was that he was lame in his feet. And we find that back to chapter 9. We find that that's kind of the bottom line on who this guy is. But he's lame. It's interesting in that culture, and it's not far different today, that somebody who was lame, that's a physical reality. But the cultural reality was that they were a person who was considered humiliated or humbled, set aside. And generally in that culture, disabled people were disregarded and they were dependent upon somebody else to care for them. And that was really the state of the grandson of King Saul, that he was living in obscurity and dependent upon others. And we pick that information up as we look beginning in verse 4. So we're back to chapter 9, 2 Samuel 9, verse 4. "And the king said to him, 'Where is he?' And Ziba said to the king, 'He's in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel at Lodabar.' And the king David sent and brought him from the house of Machir, the son of Amiel at Lodabar. And Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and paid homage." So that's what you do before a king. "And David said," and this intrigues me, "David said, 'Mephibosheth.'" And I think that what's going on there, if I'm reading into the text, I realize, but I think that as David saw Mephibosheth, maybe for the first time, I can just imagine that as he looked in his face, he looked in his eyes, maybe he saw something of Jonathan's eyes. He saw something of Jonathan's face. And I think that when David spoke Mephibosheth, it was not a gruff thing. It was a loving thing. Oh, Mephibosheth. It was a compassionate expression from the heart of the man, the king. Got to read on now, still in the middle of verse 6. "And he answered, 'Behold, I'm your servant.' And David said to him, 'Do not fear, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father.'" But I think David is thinking in terms of the covenant here. This is God-like kindness. "I'm going to show you the kindness of God. And I will restore to you all the land of Saul your father, and you shall eat at my table always." Do you realize what's going on here? He's getting the inheritance that had been withheld to him. Besides that, he's being brought to the king's table to live as a son. It's like an adopted son of the king. But verse 8 is so significant. "And he paid homage," that is, Mephibosheth paid homage and said, that means he bowed down, I believe. "And he said, 'What is your servant that you should show regard for,'" you see what that says? "'For a dead dog such as I.'" See, just a throwaway, kick-around dog. That's the way people regarded Mephibosheth. And that's the way Mephibosheth regarded himself. "I'm just a worthless, throwaway dog." Now, your pastor and his family have rescued Midnight, a little dog. Isn't that great? Isn't that great? But But more significantly, David rescued Mephibosheth, a disabled human being. Well, I don't have time to tell you the rest of the story, but David did make sure that there was provision for Mephibosheth and his family on his estate, cared for by Ziba and his family. But all the time, Mephibosheth ate at the king's table like the son of a king. I think there's a great lesson in this for us. The attitude of King David toward a disabled man, I believe, is a model of what our attitude should also be toward disabled people. Physically disabled, and it seems to me it's logical to extend that to intellectually disabled as well. And again, that's the mission of Shepherd's Ministries, to show the kindness of God, the chesed of God, to intellectually disabled people. But that's not good enough for shepherds to do it. I think that that's really my mission as a believer, your mission as individual believers and as a church, to be attentive to needy people around you, that you be an agency, that you be a community who shows the chesed of God, the kindness of God, to people around you who are otherwise marginalized or ignored or put down or abused. You have the opportunity to be a community of care, a community of kindness. Do you realize that unless your community is way different than the rest of our nation, that 3% of the people around you are intellectually disabled? It's quite a lot of folks. And each of those has a mom and a dad. And probably some siblings. So pretty quickly, there's probably 10% or more of your community that's affected by intellectual disability. And you run into them. And the question is, how do you treat them? May it be that you will be noticeable in the community because you are people who show them the kindness of God. God-like compassion. Helping them, providing for them. Inviting them to spend time with you instead of shoving them aside. Wouldn't that be wonderful? All right. I'm at the end of my message. And we're already at the closing time. Do we still have time to watch the DVD, or do you want me to quit? Okay. Let's do the DVD, and while your pastor's coming to get that started, let me just explain that it's with this kind of the heart of the kindness of God that several years ago our leadership looked around and said, what's an unmet need in our community among intellectually disabled people? And we focused on young adults who finished their schooling program. They've been mainstreamed through the schooling program, but generally what we discovered is they were sitting home watching TV, playing video games, and doing nothing productive. With a little more help, maybe their lives could be changed.
And that's what we do here at Shepherd's College. We help bring them to that point.
If you have that heart desire that you really want to go to college and you really want to make a difference in your life, and you have an earnest desire to be out on your own, we're going to give you those tools that you'll need to be able to do that.
They're going to have friends, that they're going to have people there to relate to that have gone through a lot of the same things that they've gone through growing up, but also a chance to spread their wings and really find out what that means.
The students have dreams just like young people everywhere, things they'd like to do with their lives. If we can provide them with enough skills and with enough experiences where they can demonstrate that they have that skill set, then we think that's going to make them attractive to employers as they head out.
This is a college experience for them, and so it is a whole person. They are having the academic classes. They have residential life programming.
The students change their view of themselves while they're here with us, and that's intentional.
I'd like them to reach a level of appropriate independence. You've probably heard that a lot around here, because it's going to be different for each student.
Appropriate independence is it's supported self-sufficiency that is specific to individual strengths, and it's also guided by Christian values. So it looks different for every one of our students.
It really helps me, you know, living with someone else and with someone who's not my family. And it's been helping me grow spiritually, and it's been helping me grow physically and mentally, you know, emotionally.
We strive to design our student housing to be an extension of our classroom, so they can take what the students are learning in their cooking class or in their budgeting class or in their life skills class and then practice that and put that into practice in their student housing. And even outside of that, when the students go on a regular basis to the grocery store to do their shopping, they're using and putting to practice their budgeting skills, the social skills that they're learning, the cooking and how to develop a menu and a shopping list. And it's just allowing them to put to practice on a daily basis with theory that they're learning in class.
I'm going to give you 5 minutes to come up with your plan, where you can talk and brainstorm and come up with what you're going to do. Then I'm going to give you 5 minutes to do your plan, but you cannot talk.
We've been working on teamwork for a while, and I give them a goal or a challenge, and then they have to use the skills that we've been learning in communication class and apply them to that activity.
I think that we've learned a lot this semester with teamwork and understanding how teamwork is. How do we get to do better at teamwork? Well, it's by understanding each other, by working on it together, and becoming friends together as a team.
With communication, not just that they need to accomplish the goal at hand, but they need to do it well in the process. And then we talk about how that applies to the future when they're in a job site.
Think about if we were making a building, and we just threw everything together.
We want them also to develop some vocational training while they're here. Right now we currently offer 2 specialty majors, which are culinary arts and horticulture. And so they get some very specific training in those 2 fields.
On the first year level, we're just teaching them, you know, basically how to cook at home.
Well, we got a form it, everything has steps.
The second year students, when they go into their major, are really hoping that they can actually be professionals in the industry. And it's our job to make sure that happens. It's going to be about where they're going to actually make a living. And they might actually, some of them might potentially live completely on their own. So this is critical training.
Well, the green industry is really growing the past few years. It's even just home gardeners. And as they age, they're going to need people to help maintain their landscapes, and our students would be very successful at that. Because the green industry can be seasonal, we decided that we'd also try to learn skills to work in a flower shop.
Nice. That looks just like that example.
Yep. Oh, it's a joy every day. I mean, Brian and Jess are great. Just to see them, once, you know, it clicks, oh, I can do this, it's not that big of a challenge, or they can picture themselves doing it once they're not with me. That's very rewarding.
My name is Kyle Engdahl. The 4 things I like to do is play sports, video games, friends, and family.
One of the things that is evident is that a lot of the people here who live here or who come to the college have experienced a lot of discrimination and even abuse in different areas. And they're carrying that with them. And this is something that we care deeply about and hope that we can help them heal.
For a lot of the students, for a large portion of their life, they were told, you can't do that for one reason or another. And so I made one rule in my classroom that where they're not allowed to say I can't, because everything that I ask them to do are things that they can do.
We're trying to make make them aware of the fact that they were designed on purpose and for a purpose. And it permeates through everything that we do, that they're valued.
I just can come here and be myself and make friends and have friends.
He was excited to get back. That let us know right away that there was something special going on here.
I just like being myself, you know, my goofy self, you know.
He would tell me, wow, when I was wearing this shirt, I realized I had washed this myself. Just the feeling of independence that he was doing things for himself, and it made him proud. Just let us know that this is going to be a program that's going to work.
Let me just tell you two quick things about some of the people you saw there. First of all, Kyle, who said he likes to be his goofy self, and that was his grandma at the end there. The good news about Kyle, even better than the fact that he just graduated this last June, is the fact that during his first year, he got saved. It's from a LDS, a Mormon family background, and yet he was saved there first year, and one of six students that I know of that have been saved at Shepherd's College. Gloria, the one that was talking earlier on about, you know, having grown in all these different areas and so on, I understand that when Gloria arrived on campus, kind of pushed there by her parents, you know, she had her shoulder slumped forward and the hair down in her face and just kind of no self-confidence and just kind of a wallflower. She didn't look like that there, did she? And in fact, the interesting story is that by the time she did her internship, she had blossomed so that she became very valuable in her internship, so much so that the boss said, I don't want to lose Gloria, so he hired her. So when she graduated, she already had a job. Gloria was one of the first five graduates. Interestingly, four of them already had employment when they graduated. It's a pretty successful program. So that's the story of Shepherd's College. Thanks for being patient with me. At least I think you acted patient. And thank you very much for the opportunity today. And, Pastor, I'll turn it back to you.